This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And with
joining us
today from our friends at NORAD, we have
Trevor. Isn't that one of those mutually exclusive statements, NORAD friends?
No, we're all buddies.
Okay,
yeah, we're all
good.
Buddies. Absolutely.
Yeah, this is Trevor Boswell, call sign Boat.
Boat, yes, there's a story there.
There is. But what we're concerned with today is what happens to you if you bust a TFR.
Yes, sir.
And NORAD's going to come and get you.
Well, I guess that's if you don't answer them on the radio first.
That's usually a good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, you guys aren't immediately scrambled when you get a TFR, right?
No. We like to de-escalate at the lowest possible level, so hopefully air traffic control, when you're speaking them, can help you get you where you need to be or get you pointed in a direction that you should be going.
Make you realize the mistake that you have made and fix it immediately without scrambling you guys.
That's the idea.
Yeah, we live in the airspace that is closed whenever President Biden comes home.
Okay.
And one of the airports that we like has had airplanes, you know, directed to visit.
Yeah, it is a more common occurrence in the presidential TFR world, including that special flight rules area over the Washington, D.C. vicinity. That is where we see the most number of intercepts, usually 3 to 4 per week overall system-wide, but the predominance of those are in the D.C. area.
Now, when you ask the pilots, I mean, obviously they land and are asked many, many questions.
Sure.
I guess the first one is, did you know there was a TFR? Did you even check to see if there were any TFRs?
Well, that's exactly why we're here. And the answer sometimes is no, unfortunately. And a lot of that is just basic ignorance, basic, you know, laziness, for lack of a better way to put it. So that's why we're here at the show. We come out here to educate and train pilots that fly GA aircraft specifically, because that is the most common intercept.
That was definitely not a GA aircraft.
I don't believe it was. Unless there's some new certification I don't understand.
Yeah,
about.
Really.
Yeah. We come out here, we give presentations, and on Monday and Wednesday this week, we gave a aerial display that looked at the intercept procedure from both the fighter and from the GA aircraft perspective.
Okay, so you're doing that to, not to scare us, but to tell us that this is what you might expect.
Exactly.
Should you do this?
Yeah, because it's obviously going to be a little bit of a startle if you're not expecting a fighter aircraft to show up off your wing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't be.
No, definitely not. So we want to try to, you know, calm the nerves and everything else. And paramount to everything is safety. So if it doesn't feel right, you know it's not right. Don't do it, right? And so we want everybody to be safe. We are not going to purposely force you into something that is unsafe. And if it feels like it is, doesn't seem like it's something that your aircraft can do or you are capable of doing, then let's not do it. Be safe, but most, you know, remain predictable throughout the whole time, and everybody will be a lot more at ease with what's going on.
Now, you demonstrated the in-flight interdiction, if you want to call it that, or intercept.
Mm-hmm.
If the GA pilot is so dense that he does not comply or even acknowledge, will you follow him to his original destination, wait for him to land, and then ask questions?
Yeah, well, we were kind of forced to do that, right? We can't control the aircraft. And unfortunately, if it gets to a point where they are going towards the thing that we are defending, there may have to be some other action taken that we don't really want to have to take, and we've never had to take, which would be including shooting down the aircraft. But we've never had to do
that. Let's not do that.
Yeah,
well, what about if he's busted the TFR, but it looks like he's going to skirt it? He's definitely not headed for the center of it, but he's traversing the airspace.
Yeah, so we hand out some cards that has an exact scenario, and typically if they're not looking at like a threat, we'll probably just monitor them. We take down all the information, and while we are airborne, we are coordinating with whoever owns that aircraft, whether it be a flight school, a company, or it could be a private owner, and we're tracking that information down via the tail number on the side of the aircraft, trying to figure out who's actually at the command of the aircraft and trying to figure out exactly what the intent was.
Right, and what do we need to do about it?
Exactly, yeah, and until we show up on site, we don't really know what's going on. If we get verbal communication with them established through air traffic control or through the fighter aircraft, then we can ask some questions and get some answers, but until then, we don't really know.
Okay. I imagine as an intercept pilot, it's always a little tense.
It can be, obviously. It's a very kind of uncomfortable situation to think that you might have to do something that you don't really ever want to have to go do.
Right.
But it might be necessary at some point. So they go through a very high-intensity training program, and they go through recurrent training throughout the year to maintain their currency, their level of expertise, and skill.
Well, that and flying the airplane at the low end of its regime.
Correct, yeah. And as you saw in the demonstration of the display this week, it was very thrust intensive, a lot of power coming out of the back of the F-16 that was on display out there from our friends at the Duluth Air National Guard. But also at the low end of the speed regime, you know, Cessnas or whatnot, we're going to say they're 80 knots or so is about the normal speed that we would expect to intercept them. That is obviously possible for us to fly that that slow, but it's not a comfortable space, and so that's why we always fly in pairs. And you see the one that was rocking its wings and giving the visual indications of what it would like the aircraft to do, but there's that one 3 miles behind that's kind of been a big, giant, slow S-weave to maintain that 2 to 3 miles behind and monitoring the situation to see what that aircraft's going to do.
Okay, and as GA pilots, you have to train us what all your visual signals mean.
We do, and you can pull those all from the ICAO and AIM and everything else like that from the paper, but I don't expect that pilots are going to have to read through that as they are flying along, going to wherever they're going. So we produce this little card you can find on www.norad.mil/general-aviation. I know it's a mouthful, but you can come by our booth in Hangar D. Come pick up a copy of it, and then tomorrow at 11:30, we are giving another presentation on this exact topic, and we'll hand those out there as well.
I noticed you made it easier because you're using a twin that's a little faster.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We're trying to help out a little bit.
Yeah. You don't want to make a mistake in an air show. You know.
Not at all.
Now you've flown intercepts yourself.
Only in combat. I've never actually done this mission directly.
Combat's only worse.
Well, they're a little less compliant, let's say.
Yes,
maybe say they're a little less compliant.
Willing.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my goodness! Thank you. No.
Yeah, really.
So that's our primary job, and then you know we always look forward. It's end of July. We're looking forward in the future, and December's right around the corner, and so we shift at the beginning of December over to our other primary mission, which is helping Santa navigate the National Airspace System.
Yes,
and get those presents to those kids on time, on target.
There you go. We live on the East Coast, as we said earlier, more or less. I imagine you guys have a bunch of aircraft stationed around because of the D.C. and Camp David and Delaware, all those areas.
We do, yeah. They're stretched all across the continental United States, Canada, and Alaska. So we have units on alert 24/7, 365, that are ready and willing to respond at the direction of the Secretary of Defense or his designated appointee.
So not only ready, willing, and ready to go, fully armed.
Correct, at all times, absolutely. So we have a few units
in
Canada.
We're going to see those little pointy missile-y things on the wingtips.
And they're going to have a blue band on them, letting you know they're real.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah. Or sorry, yellow band. Excuse me.
Okay.
Yeah, so they are ready to go 24/7, 365.
So don't test them.
No, please don't. Please don't. Again, the focus is aviate, navigate, communicate, squawk, talk, and be ready
and
to.
And listen.
And then listen obviously does definitely help. Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that it says here on this card, your actions, remain predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that would be a good thing. But the one thing I like is talk to the fighter on 121.5.
Absolutely.
Many people probably don't know that, but if the pilot pulls up alongside of you and is making hand signals that look like numbers, that's your radio call. Get on that horn and talk to the guy.
Exactly.
I can only imagine what the first conversation sounds like, and the guy's pooping his pants. It's like, what's going on?
It's definitely not a calm experience, I would imagine. I've never had it happen to me, but I cannot imagine it's going to be a comfortable experience by any stretch.
So remain calm.
Exactly. Remain calm, remain predictable, and be safe.
Yeah, keep calm. What was that? Stay calm, keep flying?
Yeah, stay calm, keep flying. And there he is. Of course, he's talking to the intercept pilot, and he's got his cell phone out taking pictures.
Most likely. I'm sure that's happened.
We lovingly joke that it's a good one-time free air show.
At
the end of all this, you're going to go talk to somebody in the law enforcement world, and the FAA may have a discussion point for the purposes of your certification going forward. So,
and
the Canadian forces accordingly. So
for in the, the common man vernacular, this is going on your permanent record.
Yeah.
Very much so. Very much so.
One more of these, and you'll be flying a cargo plane.
Oh, no, here we go. And we have a friend who's doing that. He says it's actually a pretty good gig. So 2 to 3 intercepts a week. Blows my mind.
Yeah, we'll launch them, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're actually going to get to the target aircraft that we're concerned about.
Okay, so hopefully someone gets a hold of them on the radio.
En route, they usually cancel, exactly. And then the F-16s or whatever it is go do training missions.
I was going to say, they're like, darn it, I just go. Yeah, all right.
Honestly, I find that hard to believe because I thought that as pilots, we're trained to higher standards than your normal driver on the highways. But if you're doing 2 to 3 a week, I'm beginning to think, you know, there's a lot of dummy pilots out there.
Well, I don't like to label anybody. No. We like to, you know, be kind and whatnot. But there are some pilots that go out the door with an expectation that it'll just be the normal thing that they always expect. And that's why we check NOTAMs. That's why we check the weather, because things change. And that's what we're looking to do, is get them to do that. And that's why we're here.
Skies will be clear today with a slight chance of F-16s off your right side. What?
Yeah. And of course, you know, presidential plans, they change rapidly sometimes, so a TFR can pop up quicker than a Delaware thunderstorm.
It could, yeah. Normally, we should have at least 48 hours of notice for all that kind of stuff. But sometimes, you know, things do change. Emergencies take place. And then sometimes the TFRs move as well over time. Those are all depicted in the NOTAMs. You can go through the FAA website to find those. And then at any sporting event, any major stadium with more than 30,000 people, they're going to have a consistent TFR located over that 3,000 feet and 3 miles in diameter when it is active, 1 hour prior and 1 hour after the event.
Right, so it doesn't matter the event. I mean, NASCAR, baseball, football, whatever.
If they have at least 30,000 people for that facility, then yes.
See, now I never knew that.
Yep, it's a hidden. It's kind of sneaky.
You had mentioned the other day Super Bowl, and that sure, that makes total sense.
And that one goes to the traditional 10-mile and 30-mile ring. Okay. But the smaller ones for the regular day-to-day, you know, Atlanta Braves game, that one will have the 3 and 30.
Huh.
I wonder if they do those for Bon Jovi concerts.
30,000 people,
there's 30,000 people, yeah.
Yeah,
there
you go.
Absolutely.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Yeah, they're flyover for Woodstock, huh?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
Going by there. All right, we've been speaking with Trevor Boswell from NORAD. Please pay attention to the TFRs so he gets bored.
Yes, we want him to be snoozing, not
That's
chasing
right.
you down.
This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.